You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me on video chat, I know a lot of you have been very fired up about this because if you follow Rob Staton, which most Seahawks fans do, you have a general idea what set up this discussion to begin with. Both of us have thrown together off-season plans, lengthy off-season plans, and they're quite dramatically different. And so really looking forward to breaking down some of those differences and what is going to be, in my opinion, the most critical offseason of the John Schneider, Pete Carroll era. Rob, glad to have you joining the show for the first time, and I've been looking forward to this since we set it up.
No, thank you for having me, Corbin. It's great to be here, and congratulations, by the way, on your recent engagement. That was great news, and any bit of good news at the moment, I'm sure we'll all celebrate it because it's been a weird year, so congratulations with that.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, any positive news right now is a big deal. And again, going back to that article, that's really what stemmed all of this. And I had some people on social media like, did you see Rob just burning you on his article? And I'm like, he wasn't burning me. We've got different, we have different opinions. We are both straight shooters. So there's going to be some disagreements here, but it's not, this is not going to turn into World War III or anything. And I think The big point that I want to get across right now, I think looking at your plan and my plan, I think we have a lot of similar ideas. There's just some very stark differences along the way. And so we have to start this conversation, though, with the biggest storyline in the Seahawks offseason. And it's one that I don't think anybody was anticipating because we've been dealing with this for the last couple of years. And I thought, there's not going to be any Russell Wilson news. And then 48 hours after he gets the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, now rumors are circulating again he wants out, and then he breaks his public persona, expressing his frustrations about not being involved in personnel decisions enough, not having good enough pass blocking, you name it. It was just out of character, not what we've seen from Russell Wilson. I guess that's where I want to start here. Before we even tackle offseason plans, what do you make of this Russell Wilson situation? It seems like everybody in the media has kind of got their own viewpoint here, and it's a wide spectrum.
I just think Russell Wilson is making it clear that he's concerned about the direction of the team. And I think that his vision for what needs to happen moving forward is different to Pete Carroll's. And I do think that one of the underrated things from last year, Corbin, was, it was reported that Russell Wilson made an ultimatum to the team that said, look, essentially, let me cook or, I'm going to be baking in another kitchen. And they let him cook. They gave him that opportunity. And then at the first sign of any kind of trouble, the cooking ended. The utensils were put back in the drawer. The oven was switched off. And I just think that Russell Wilson has remembered that. And I think that is an issue. And I think that whatever is said now, as opposed to we're going to do this, we're going to do that, I wonder if Russell Wilson thinks, well, we've said this before. We were going to go and do this, and we ended up doing that. And I think that he has a very clear view on what he wants to do. And it's all tied into legacy. Whenever you hear Russell Wilson speak, every other word seems to be legacy these days, mm-hmm. doesn't it? He's thinking about winning an MVP, about statistically being one of the best quarterbacks. A lot of that rhetoric we heard early in his career about the separations in the preparation and how big a football field is has kind of gone by the wayside. And now there's a lot more talk about where he wants to be ultimately when he finishes playing. And I don't think he believes with Pete Carroll and Pete Carroll's approach that he's going to get to where he wants to be. And I think his challenge to the Seahawks right now is do what some of the things that I'm saying, give me more power in play calling and on personnel. Let us run the offense that I want to run as opposed to the offense that Pete Carroll wants to run. And if they're not willing to do that, then a divorce within 12 months is a possibility, I think.
Yeah, I think you and I are pretty aligned with this because I think the idea of a trade happening right now is ludicrous. And I don't think, based on the people I've talked to, that that's what Russell Wilson wants, at least right now. I don't think he's got a foot out the door, but I do think he has sent some warning shots to the organization. And you can tell that by the things that he said, just being, again, out of character. That's not what we expect from Russell Wilson. But he's tired of getting blasted. And this offensive line was better last year, but they regressed in the second half of the season. And I think that was part of the reason the offense really stalled out. Everybody's to blame. I don't think that you can just point at one person and say, you're the reason the offense sputtered in the second half. And they still were throwing the ball a lot. It just didn't seem like the adjustments were made. There were some plays that were missed on the field by Russ himself. He has taken some accountability for that. So this is going to be something that isn't going to go away, unfortunately. It's going to continue to be a talking point. I don't think there's any move happening now, but if the Seahawks don't respond to Wilson's comments and do what they need to do, then I think next year I might have you on the podcast again, and we're talking about potentially him getting dealt somewhere. And it would be more financially reasonable for them to do it next year too, without quite as big of a cap hit. Now let's talk offensive line, because that's the big reason that Russell Wilson was so outspoken a few weeks ago. Is he's tired of getting hit. And of course, some of that is on him. He holds on to the football a lot. He's a playmaker. He tries to extend plays. But if you watch that playoff game, you know that this line still has a lot of room to improve. And this is where you and I agree most in our offseason plans. They can't afford to go out and get Luke Jokels and Jamarcus Webbs anymore. They have got to stash that offseason approach and go after somebody like a Corey Linsley, or if Brandon Scherff somehow hits the market, Joe Thuney, somebody that is an established game changer that's played at a Pro Bowl, All-Pro level for several years. That's how you get Russell Wilson's attention, but that's been the move the Seahawks have not been willing to make on the offensive line. The big sticking point is, where do you get the money to make that happen?
Yeah, that is the big sticking point. But I do think it is the way that they have to go. I mean, I think Russell Wilson's position is very much that if you give me an opportunity not to be blasted up front, I mean, if you can actually take on the LA Rams or anybody else for that matter, the Green Bay Packers a year ago, and your offensive line can hold up and can help you run the ball and can keep Russell Wilson clean, I think that he believes he's good enough, and he is good enough, in order to win a playoff game against any team in the NFC. But if you roll out a line or the two lines and they're getting whipped by the Rams on both sides of the ball, then you are going to really struggle. It doesn't matter if you win 12 games or not. You get to the playoffs, you're going to really struggle. I think their plan for the last few years has been to trust in Mike Solari, much in the way that they trusted in Tom Cable in previous years. We'll go and sign guys who fit, who come at a certain price. You know, Mike Iupati for a couple of million dollars, J.R. Sweezy, DJ Fluker, players that are familiar with Solari's blocking or Seattle's way of doing things. And to a certain extent, it worked. But we're now at a point where the quarterback's voicing his dissatisfaction. You have invested $35 million in a quarterback, Corbin. And I think you have to sort of say, where does our main bulk of our resource need to go now? And for me, it has to be the offensive line and the defensive line, with a particular nod to the O-line, because that is the way that you are going to avoid a very ugly situation with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, you've got to address the center and left guard positions. I don't know that it's financially feasible they can tackle both those positions in free agency. And this leads to one of the sticking points. Reading your article, your assessment critiquing my offseason plan, and I want to make this very clear. I have never had a mock draft go against what I wanted to do more than that one particular one for my simulation, because I did want to draft a left guard early, but there were 8 of them picked in the 14 picks before the Seahawks were up at 56. And that's the beauty of mock simulators. And at that point, I was looking at the guards left, and I'm like, these are like 5th and 6th round grade guards that are available. There was just a major run on them. And so that is the strategy that I would take, though, moving forward, is I'm getting a center in this free agent class that is a top-tier guy. Instead of buying a bunch of mid-level dudes, I'm signing a player like Corey Linsley if I can. I'm going to put the money into a player like that that's a proven all-pro commodity, and then I'm going to use one of my early draft picks, most likely that second rounder, to get a guard. And you could flip those. You could go get yourself a left guard and draft a center, but it feels like that's the only combination that's going to work here, rather than buying mid-tier guys at center and left guard that might not be better than what you have. That's going to make Russell Wilson yawn if you do that.
I agree with you. And I actually think that is what they're going to do. I think they probably will invest in a center. And Linsley sort of sticks out like a sore thumb, doesn't he? You know, he's the guy that makes a lot of sense. And you know that John Schneider's going to love the idea of going and nicking somebody from the Green Bay Packers. So I think that does make sense. And the draft is very good. to go and get a guard. And look, you're right. There is a chance that the well could run dry when you're picking at 56, because it is a very good offensive line class interior, but it's very good in sort of like the first two rounds. It's not a draft where you're necessarily going to get somebody deep into round four and five who can come in and do a job for you initially. So you do have to look at that position early. I do just think, though, that there may well be some options. There are so many options that I think that one probably will last to 56. I think the Senior Bowl revealed a couple of options that could still be there. You know, guys who we don't anticipate going into that Senior Bowl who are going to start to move up the board. And I think there were a couple of players who did that. I think there is a decent base of players, sort of the established names who could still be there. So I mean, if I were, I've been doing mock drafts and every time I've done one, I mean, like you, I don't just sort of think, oh, it's convenient for a player to go there, so I'll put him there and then the Seahawks can get what they need. I do try and do it as a, well, what is this team's vital need? Who are they most likely to go and get? What are the types of players they go and get? And when I've done those simulations, I have generally found there has been a left guard or a tackle who could kick inside to go there. So I think they will be able to get a guard at 56 or whenever they pick first. I hope personally that they can get back into the draft a little bit more. I don't say that as someone who writes a draft blog. I say that as someone who thinks four draft picks when you've got very little money just doesn't seem the best way to proceed here. You can get some cheap talent in the draft. I would hope they're going to acquire some more draft stock. But I think that a guard with your pick, with your main first pick and a center in free agency would be a good plan. And I think that Russell Wilson would probably approve of that as well.
Yeah, as long as it's the right guys. And again, in free agency, go out and get that big name. Lindsley's the one that continues to jump out to me. But, you know, and for fallback options, David Andrews would still be a significant upgrade over what you had in Ethan Posick. And so there are some options, but I think they have to change their offseason priorities as far as how they handle things and be more aggressive going after a big name like that. Now let's talk skill positions real quick, because I've been ripped and criticized about my love for T.Y. Hilton, and I get it. He's not the receiver he was, say, a few years ago, and everybody keeps mentioning the Greg Olsen comparison. To me, T.Y. Hilton, though, still has enough punch as a number three receiver. He's never had players like Metcalf and Lockett around him. The things that he still does well are what the Seahawks need on offense. They need somebody that you can get the football to and he can create after the catch. He can still do that. This is still a guy that can still occasionally take the top off of defense. He can play the slot and the outside. But since I've written that offseason article, I've had plenty of discussions with people that are well-informed, and the talk continues to be about the tight end position. And so that really leads me to the main point here. This team needs a clear-cut number three target that is an upgrade over anything they had last year, whether that is going out and getting another receiver or adding a player like, say, Jonnu Smith. It sounds like the Seahawks are very high on him. That, again, is going to come down to price point, though, because we're just going to have to see. This market's going to be so unpredictable with the cap going down.
Completely agree with the number three target. They desperately need that. And it's not just the offensive line. I mean, Russell Wilson is the same as all of us. He's kind of sat there watching the Super Bowl thinking, how on earth have Tampa Bay managed to acquire so many weapons? I mean, with Mike Evans and Godwin, and, you know, they've already got a couple of good tight ends. I know O.J. Howard was injured for most of the year, but then they go and get Gronk, and then they go and get Antonio Brown. And then, you know, Tom Brady finds his small sort of slot receiver who kind of, you know, no one's ever heard of, but he ends up scoring plenty of touchdowns and having a contribution this year. And then, you know, they have Ronald Jones, they draft a running back, and they just decide they're going to go and sign Leonard Fournette. And I think the Seahawks need, I'm not saying that they need to, then nobody's going to acquire that level of weapons. I mean, the books have invested there and made picks and you know, had guys who are in club control as well. They're not going to be able to do that. But I think they need to put a real arsenal around Russell Wilson that extends beyond just Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf as the main reliable, you know, fearsome threats that a team in the week has to spend a bit of time game planning for. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, you're the Rams, you're looking at DK Metcalf, and you can say, okay, Jalen Ramsey, your job today is to keep an eye on him, and then we'll have a plan for Tyler Lockett. Well, the Seahawks then need to ask a couple more questions with their running game, with another target, perhaps with two more targets. I'd like to see them do that. The one good piece of news is that this is an unbelievable draft for receivers. Now, I know, again, we come back to the point, the Seahawks don't have many draft picks. I think you could still get a good one in round four. And the Seahawks like to take receivers in round four. They've often done that. If you
with
can get
very little success, I will add that.
Touche. That's a great point. But I think that there are so many weapons in this draft that I think a plan could be to sign a tight end and then go and draft a receiver. And I don't think that's a bad plan. I'd like to see them draft a receiver a little bit earlier than round 6 and 7. They've kind of got into that habit of getting guys there. I think you can get a slightly better player, you know, 2 or 3 rounds earlier. But I will say this though, Corbin, if they sign a tight end like Jonnu Smith, I really hope we're not sat here in a year's time talking about a 250-yard, 2-touchdown stat line. If they get a tight end and if they invest in a tight end, or if they even draft a tight end like Brevin Jordan or Trey McKitty or, you know, Pat Freiermuth, but, you know, there's a handful in this class. If you're going to go down that road, get him involved. You know, scheme a way for a tight end to be a big part of your game plan, because it feels like it's just been a wasted investment for a while now at that position.
That was the biggest downfall, in my opinion, for Brian Schottenheimer. It was not the inability to adjust as far as, you know, getting too deep safety looks and stuff. It was getting the tight ends consistently involved. They had too many good pieces there to not be more involved in the passing game, and yet it just never came to fruition the last couple of years. But that's where the Shane Waldron effect comes into play. Because even if they're only doing a few wrinkles from the Rams offense, you know the tight end position is going to be prioritized more in the passing game. And I think that's the biggest reason why we've already heard about them asking about Zach Ertz. They are interested in Jonnu Smith, Gerald Everett, the relationship he already has with Shane Waldron being with the Rams. So all those names make sense. There's some tight ends in the draft class that are good picks that could fit with this offense, a lot of 12 personnel. And so that's really the big X factor. And when you're talking about offensive line and run game too, all those decisions are going to be based partially on what the offense is expected to look like. And honestly, none of us know at this point what Shane Waldron's attack is going to look like. We can make some educated guesses, but we don't know how much of the offense is going to be retained, how much of it's going to be a new system. If it's like it was last time, it's 70-30. I think Waldron's going to get more leeway than that, but we won't know until training camp. So those are the big questions that they have to decide. And we'll have a general idea, free agency in the draft, what they do in offense, what this system's going to look like with the type of players that they are bringing in. When we return from the break, Rob and I are going to switch gears to the defensive side of the football. I think we got a few more disagreements on how the Seahawks should handle their offseason approach on defense. So we'll be breaking everything down from the defensive line to linebackers to, of course, Jamal Adams and the safeties. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my special guest, Rob Staton. We're going to continue diving into our individual Seahawks offseason plans, now swinging over to the defensive side of the football. Let's swing to the defensive side, because I think this is where you and I start to, we hit the fork in the road and we really have a wide split. And I want to start talking about the defensive line, because to me, aside from Russell Wilson's situation, there's the chance they could do a restructure there to try to open some cap up. But the other area that they can create major cap space is the defensive line. And you mentioned this is still an area they could shore up, but Jaron Reed and Carlos Dunlap both have cap hits near $14 million. I don't think it's tenable to keep either one of those players right now on that current contract with that big of a cap hit. And so I'm glad John Schneider has that job and I don't, because that would be extremely difficult to try to figure out what you want to do there, because those are both two really solid players that you don't want to lose. But as other teams are figuring out, this is an off season, you might have to make some very tough choices getting rid of some players that are really good just because you don't have money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think the thing with Dunlap and Reed is it's a very difficult one to work out, because if we remember what the pass rush was like at the start of the 2020 season, it was horrendous. I mean, it was disgustingly bad, and it was creating a historically bad defense as a consequence. And I do think things changed when Carlos Dunlap came in, and I think we saw a big improvement in Jaron Reed's production when Dunlap came in. And if you lose those two players, and everything you said is correct, I mean, like, Dunlap's an aging pass rusher, albeit still with some talent, and Jaron Reed's that kind of player that's in the very much the good, not great category, and yet is earning quite a great salary, let's be fair. However, you know, my personal idea would be that I do think what you have to do this offseason is combine a bit of borrowing and, you know, a bit of using some of the cap for the future, but also a very honest and aggressive approach in order to shift resource to more important areas of the team. I mean, I just to look at the Seahawks on the whole, you know, what core players do they have for the long term? I mean, they don't have a left tackle for the long term. They don't have a pass rusher for the long term. They don't have a cornerback for the long term. I mean, these are all big issues. Really, the three long-term, you know, hang your hat on type players they've got are Wilson, DK Metcalf, and Jamal Adams. And I think you need to sort of look at where you've been spending your money. And that, and I'm sure we're going to get onto these two positions because, you know, as you probably were, I've got a lot to say.
I know
say
exactly
on
where you're heading here.
I mean, it's... I don't understand why the Seahawks have spent as much as they have at linebacker and safety. And I think you've got to try and shift some resource. So I've got no issue really with if they move on from Dunlap and Reed and decide they want to either get younger there or even better there and make some investment, that's fine. But let's see some proper investment in that defensive line, as with the offensive line. And if you're going to have to make some difficult choices elsewhere on the roster, then do it. Personally, I'd like to move other players to create even more cap space in 2022 and then give Dunlap and Reed an extension, which would lower their cap hit this year. That would be the plan that I would go and try and build up the defensive line rather than tearing it down. Because I think for the last 2 years, they moved Frank Clark and didn't really have an answer to replace him. They moved they didn't re-sign Jadeveon Clowney and didn't really have an answer to replace him. I think if you do the same with Carlos Dunlap, you just get a hat trick of 3 years in a row of moving your best pass rusher and not really having a plan to replace them.
So I completely agree with you on Dunlap. And in my plan, I extended him as well because I still think he's got plenty of good football left in him. And the one thing I was considering is, especially after watching film again, Alton Robinson was a player last year that, especially first half of the season, I was just scratching my head. And by the way, to those that are watching the video cast, Rob was nice enough to wear a hat so you guys could tell which one was which. Those two bald guys with beards. But anyway, beside the point, I was scratching my bald head just wondering in the first half of the season, why is this rookie not getting more opportunities, especially with how much the pass rush was struggling? And I just felt like he time and time again came up with big plays in his limited action. And so that was something in the back of my mind. Is he a player that could be one of their latest late-round picks that ends up becoming a long-term starter and ends up being a difference maker off the edge? But I just don't know if I'm ready to put all my eggs in that basket yet, even especially with Daryl Taylor coming back. We don't know what to expect there. I just think it would be very unwise to let Dunlap go. You extend him, have him maybe finish his career in Seattle. Where you and I differ is the Jaron Reed situation, because I'm with you on the fact he's good. I don't think he's great. He has to have an elite rusher outside of him to be able to make a notable impact as a pass rusher. And maybe I'm overconfident in Clint Hurt's abilities, but just think about what he's been able to do the last 2 or 3 years. Puna Ford, undrafted, ends up becoming one of the best young defensive tackles in the league. Brian Monet has shown a lot of promise. He was an undrafted player. Cedric Lattimore, I can tell you from speaking with sources, they are fired up about that kid. And he had a really, really good debut in that playoff game. Finished third on the team in tackles. He's a three tech. I think the Seahawks could easily decide, you know what, we like Jaron Reed, but that's where we're going to save some money right there. We're going to see if we can trade him. And this is a solid, not great, but solid draft class for defensive tackles. There might be some guys in the middle rounds they can get that can come in and play a key role right away as reserves, rotational pieces. And so that's where I made the decision going to try to move him. I think there might be a few teams that have some interest because the Seahawks are going to eat $5 million of that, but they're still going to save over $8 million against the cap. And so that to me was the first major move, the first major domino that I made. Rather than extending a million guys, he was the one I felt was expendable with the guys they had on the roster. And again, I think Clint Hurt has done a fantastic job, especially with those interior defensive linemen.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting discussion. I personally, for me, you make some very valid points with regards to Jaron Reed. I just wonder, because he did finish with 6.5 sacks, and part of me is a little bit intrigued to see what he could do, you know, provided they stay healthy, both of them, you know, 16 games alongside Carlos Dunlap. And, you know, I remember what the Seahawks had with Frank Clark and Jaron Reed in 2018, and they were able to blitz 18% of the time, and they had a better sack percentage than they had when they blitzed 36% of the time in 2020. And it was because of those two guys. And part of me just wonders a little bit, if you keep Reed and you have Dunlap and you fingers crossed that you're Robinson's, or, you know, I'm not even going to count Daryl Taylor as a factor until I've seen him in a, you know, on a football field again. But if your other guys that you have there, or if you bring others in, depending on how the free agent market is, whether you could actually create a really dynamic four-man rush again. And that intrigues me a little bit there. And that's why I'm slightly hesitant just to move on from Jaron Reed. But, you know, they have to make some difficult choices, as we're going to come on to. They have to find – someone's got to go, Corbin. Let's just tell it how it is. Someone has got to go.
I just feel like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Somebody's got to go right now. Get out of here.
It's a good
somehow they have got to open up cap space somehow. So again, that was the route that I chose there, just because I look at the players they have, the coaching that they have at that position, and I just have confidence they would be able to move forward there, especially if they ended up adding somebody in the draft. But linebacker is another interesting position group, because I do agree with you, there's too much money being invested there. I think that is a position group they need to shift some things away. But just as you are hesitant to move on from Jaron Reed, I'm hesitant at this point to move on from Bobby Wagner, because under this premise, I don't see KJ Wright coming back. Now, maybe because of the salary cap situation and his age, he is going to have to settle for a hometown discount because that's all that anybody's offering him. There's a possibility that happens. If that's the case, then Seattle might be able to justify paying him. But you're going to have Jordan Brooks playing full-time. KJ Wright is going to be playing a lot less snaps as a result. I can't justify paying him the money that he has clearly earned. So under this assumption, he's no longer on the roster. I can't see Seattle moving on from Wright and Wagner in the same season. That's why I was not even entertaining the idea of trading Wagner. But I get it. The salary cap number for a 31-year-old linebacker is really large, and they could use some salary cap relief. I think letting both of them go the same offseason, that scares me.
So my opinion on this is based on really two factors. Firstly, I don't think Bobby Wagner is worth $17 million this year and $20 million next year. And for that reason alone, I mean, that is the price of a top-end pass rusher or a lockdown cornerback. And, you know, Bobby Wagner's had a great career in Seattle and will always be a very treasured player and person in Seattle. But, you know, I think that when your player is earning X amount and you have got to a certain stage in their career, sometimes you have to just rip the Band-Aid off. And I think we're there with Bobby Wagner. And I think the other aspect to this is, if they didn't want to consider moving on from Bobby Wagner this year, then my opinion, don't draft a linebacker in round one, because you've got holes at left guard, center, cornerback, running back, some linebacker, you know, in terms of that pass rushing element to it. You've got depth in the pass rush that is going with Benson Mayoa. If you are planning ahead, then that pick really, I mean, just think now. I mean, like, what did they actually do in the 2020 draft? They took a linebacker with their first pick, and then they spent a second and a third for a player with severe red flags in terms of injuries in Daryl Taylor. If they'd have taken a center, maybe moved up a couple of spots for Cesar Ruiz, who went to New Orleans, for example, and then taken a receiver or a cornerback, you know, with that's three holes, or running back, that's three holes that we're talking about that we don't really know how they're going to fill right now that are filled. If you were going to invest in a first round linebacker, then I think you've got to say, right, and a middle linebacker at that, you've got to be honest and saying, look, we've made that investment now, and we obviously thought enough of Jordan Brooks to take him when we had a lot of other needs with that first round pick. I think you've got to trust it. And part of this whole thing for me, Corbin, is I look at what they were spending at linebacker last year. $25 million for Wright and Wagner, a first-round pick on Jordan Brooks, having traded up the year before to take Cody Barton in round 3. It's just too much. That, for me, is an obscene amount of investment in a position that a lot of teams would just say, we'll find a guy. I mean, like, the Niners have great linebackers. They get him in the later rounds. They just draft agile, fast guys who love football. And look, it might be quite easy for me to say, just go and get some linebackers. It's obviously not as easy as that. But that's kind of what I want them to do. I want to see investment in the O-line and the D-line. I don't want to see any more investment at linebacker. And I want to transfer that money that Wagner is on, and I want to dump it on the lines. And next year, I want to have a top 10, if not a top 5 offensive line. And I want to be able to rush with 4. And that means taking money away from linebacker and safety and sticking it in the trenches. And personally, I think you get a better Seahawks team. I don't think they were that close last year. I know they finished 12-4. I don't think they were particularly close to being a serious, legit Super Bowl contender. And I think the pathway to achieving that is, one, making Russell Wilson happy, and 2, improving in the trenches.
Yeah, for me, the offensive line, that's where I agree with you the most on that aspect. And again, this is why Wright, to me, is not coming back. One of the many reasons is I do think they need to shift away from that. And part of the reason that I was looking maybe at drafting a linebacker early, I know a lot of people were, you said you were hitting your head against the wall as a result of that. One reason that I considered doing that is because I was looking for that pass rushing element at that Sam linebacker position. And I was also looking at the fact that, and this goes back to the Cody Barton pick, I haven't seen enough from Barton in the limited action he's been playing defense for me to feel like he is a starter caliber player in the NFL. And so you can look at the front office and say that pick did not, and maybe he's a really good special teams guy. You can say the same thing for Ben Burkervin, but do you have another guy there that you are confident you can put out there that can start? And maybe in year 3, one of those guys emerges and you're able to move Bobby Wagner beforehand. Maybe the organization is looking at that. I just, again, with you, with Jaron Reed, that's how I feel with Wagner. I think you make some points, and I've certainly thought about some of that stuff, especially the age aspect and his salary cap number. But again, I'm glad John Schneider has this job and not me. When we return for the third quarter, Rob and I are going to head to the safety position. I think we've got a lot to talk about with Jamal Adams. He's set for a contract extension, and he wants to be the highest paid safety in the league. Rob and I have a little different idea on how the organization should move forward with the star safety heading into the 2021 season and beyond. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 delicious flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of my favorites, cookies and cream, carrot cake, German chocolate, peanut butter, salted caramel, coconut, peanut butter brownie, you name it, they all are delicious. All of the bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and it's good for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. In my case, gluten-free. It's great for a keto diet as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your first order. Again, the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Time to continue our discussion with Rob Staton of the Seahawks Draft blog, continuing to look at the defense. A lot of questions on that side of the football with extensions, upcoming contracts, some very high-priced players that John Schneider's got to decide what to do with. Let's talk the safety position now to kind of wrap up our discussion, because this is a big talking point. Jamal Adams up for an extension after his first season with the Seahawks. They gave up 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick to acquire him. You and I, again, kind of in a wide distance here. If the Seahawks were going to move somebody, Bobby Wagner makes a lot more sense to me, because Jamal Adams is significantly younger. And I think Adams has just scratched the surface of what he's capable of doing in Seattle. And I think he's one of those players that his impact on defense goes well beyond what you're going to see on the stat sheet too. Being able to watch him on the practice field and just see the contagious energy that he brings the entire rest of this defense. I think that was a big part of their second half resurgence last year, is getting, just having him back on the field and just the energy that he brings. I expect his coverage is going to be better just being healthier. I don't like necessarily that they were over-reliant on blitzing him. So that goes back to the 4-man rush aspect you talk about. But I still think Jamal Adams can be one of the foundational building blocks for this team moving forward. But you are right. They are going to have to find a position group where they start to cut back on some of the resources they have so they can upgrade positions that they need to fix moving forward. So I guess Adams moving him can be on the table too. I wouldn't do it, but I can at least understand the argument.
Yeah, I would do it in a shot. I just don't think that $18 to $20 million on a blitzing safety is in no, I would never do that. I mean, I wouldn't do that for Troy Polamalu. I wouldn't do that for Cam Chancellor. I wouldn't do it for Jamal Adams. And I don't understand. For me, it was a desperate trade. I think that they got to, you know, right before the season began when they actually made the trade. And I think when they looked at their defense, they saw a unit that the only difference from the year before was that they'd swapped Jadeveon Clowney for Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayowa. Their sort of one big addition was Quinton Dunbar, who people were hoping was going to be a and he was, we didn't know whether he was going to jail or not when they made the Jamal Adams trade. So I think they looked at the unit and said, we've not really done anything. And there was this player, Jamal Adams, who was available, who was agitating to leave the Jets. And I think Pete Carroll has just said to John Snyder, get it done. Bring him in. We like his energy. We like his leadership. You know, I remember doing a lot of stuff on him on the draft, you know, going through, and people were saying he's this legendary leader at LSU. He's one of the best they've ever had. So I think that they liked some of that. And I think they thought, we can bring him in. We can be creative with him. And we can really attack sort of 2020 with an impact player, you know, a superstar defender who can try and elevate the defense to a level that we just weren't going to get with Benson Mayowa swapping in for Jadeveon Clowney and Bruce Irvin taking over at Sam. So that's why I think they made the move. And I think that's why it cost as much as it did, because essentially the Seahawks just got it done. And I don't think whenever you make a deal like that, it's in the best position. You are in no fit way to sort of negotiate and make a trade. I don't think any safety is worth that much. That trade ended up costing more than Jalen Ramsey and Khalil Mack. I mean, I think comparable to Laremy Tunsil. And when I watch him play, you know, they blitzed him 8.2 times to get 0.8 sacks a game. And I think if you asked Marquise Blair to blitz 8 times a game, there's a reasonable chance that he would get you a sack. I don't think he's a great scheme fit for Seattle. I think they blitz him as much as they do to try and justify the fact that he's there. I think the fact that he's not a great scheme fit is represented in his PFF grade. I mean, they were not talking about a guy who slipped to 15th best safety in the league. We're talking about a guy who slipped to 53rd best safety in the league playing in Seattle's scheme. Now, some of that might be the newness, the weird season, the injuries, whatever, the blitzing, I don't know. But to me, it's just not worth 18 to 20 million. And if you keep hold of Bobby Wagner and you keep hold of Jamal Adams, what you were essentially saying is that in 2022, you're going to be paying these two guys $40 million. And I just cannot do that. So if you're keeping Wagner, then Adams has got to go for me. And I just don't think it's worth it. I would try and get what you can for him. If it's two twos, it's two twos. If it's a one and a three, it's a one and a three. I do think there will be teams out there who would be interested in Jamal Adams. And I think you make the saving on the salary for next year. You take those draft picks and you invest them in other areas because you're going to need some cheap talent, because the list of players who are out of contract is just, you know, your Patty, Griffin, Carson, Posick, Wright, Irvin, Olsen, Hollister, Mayowa, Hyde. How are they going to replace all of these guys with four draft picks and $1.7 million in effective cap space? That's not even enough to give Poole Ford a second-round tender at this point. Mm-hmm. So they have to – something's got to give. And for me, it's got to be a bit more than just Jaron Reed and then borrowing and borrowing and borrowing into the next year's cap. There has to be a sizable move, and saving $18, $20 million on Adams and in the process getting a couple of picks which enable you to bring players in that will cost $2 million, $1 million. Damian Lewis cost $800,000 last year. Every team in the league needs their Damian Lewis's now. They need starters who play at a decent level for $800,000. And the Seahawks have four picks and one pick in the first three rounds. They're not able to get that talent. They're not going to be able to replace these guys with a first and a fourth and a couple of late rounders. So I think something has to give. I don't doubt for a second that his energy and His vibrancy is great. I didn't like the fact that he was clearly in no fit shape to play in at least the two Rams games last year, played in them and cost the Seahawks. And I don't know why, whether that's Pete sort of not feeling like he can say to Jamal, you're sitting, Jamal, or whether it's Jamal just being a bit too bravado and saying, I'm okay, I can play. But that's not a good environment either. I mean, like, he gave up two touchdowns against the Rams in two big games because he just couldn't make the tackle because of his injuries. And that dynamic's not good either, because like, why isn't someone saying, you ain't playing, Jamal, you're not healthy, Ryan Neal's playing? And I just, the whole thing about it, I just want to draw a line under that trade and move on. I just do not think investing in Jamal Adams for the future is the way to go.
You make a very valid point with the injury thing, though, because I want to lean on Quentin Dunbar against the Buffalo Bills, because Quentin Dunbar had no business being on the field that day. Absolutely none. And you could tell he was playing at like 50% by the way he was moving. And he just, they had him playing like 15 yards off the ball half the time because he could not cover anybody. And yet they kept playing him. And so there are some question marks in that regard. I think if you're going to move one of those two guys, I think you've got to look at the age element. And I do think the Seahawks late in the season, you start to see them figuring out better ways to deploy Jamal Adams. If they're doing their job as a coaching staff, they should have a better idea going into this next season how they can really maximize his value. And I think he's a much better coverage player than we saw last year. I do think the injuries bared on his performance. But I think you make valid points. I think there's some validity to the idea. I don't want to go into next season with both those guys not being there, though, because even with all that cap space opened up, there's no guarantee your draft picks are going to come in and immediately contribute. What free agents can you go out and sign? That's not necessarily always the best way to address things, is just patching things with free agent signing. So again, this is just an extremely difficult offseason. It's the toughest one John Schneider's had his time as the Seahawks GM. There's a number of different dominoes that are going to have to fall. Like we've said this entire time, somebody is going to have to go. They're going to have to make some tough decisions. And so we'll have a general idea what the Seahawks are thinking here in the next few weeks. I would expect, once we know what the actual salary cap number is, that all the teams in the league, there's just going to be a flurry of activity. Because if you've looked at over the cap, I think, what did I see? Like, it's at least 18 teams are like either right at the cap or they're over, and there's a bunch that are way over. Something's got to give. There's a lot of moves that have to be made. The Seahawks are in that group. And so I expect a flurry of activity before we get to free agency next month. And then we'll see which plan that they side with most here as far as what they do this offseason.
Well, there's just one last thing to add here. You know, I think the other thing, you know, and going back in history and looking at what created the Seahawks initial championship team. And I think I'd love to see them go back and do that. And, you know, when they won the Super Bowl, they had the most expensive offensive line in the league. They had a terrific, you know, other world running back. They're not going to get another Marshawn, but, you know, they had talent on the offense, and they put a lot of investment in there. And what do they have on defense? They had a young, brash, angry defense. You're not going to be able to recreate the LOB.
No.
But I think sort of going cheaper and just finding guys, and the Seahawks have done such a better job in finding cheap, young players and giving them an opportunity on defense. I mean, Quandre Diggs for a fifth rounder, DJ Reed just sort of plucking him from nowhere, the Carlos Dunlap trade for a seventh rounder, and BJ Finney. These are really intelligent moves. And this is how I think they should build their defense. And Corbin, just to look at, you know, here are the top eight defenders for Seattle last year, according to PFF. So Bobby Wagner was number one, but then you've got Puna Ford, an undrafted free agent. You've got KJ Wright. Then you've got DJ Reed, cheap pickup on free agency off the waiver wire. Alton Robinson, a fifth rounder. Ugo Amadi, a fourth rounder. Shaquille Griffin, a third rounder. And then Quandre Diggs, who cost a fifth rounder. Their best performers on defense were guys they kind of just got on the cheap and have developed, or have simply just done a great job in terms of acquisition. And I'd like to see them try and do that again. I don't necessarily want to see, you know, and again, you know, they spent so much on linebacker. When you look at safety, spending a second rounder on Marquise Blair, not really starting him as a rookie, and then before
that was a head scratcher for me when it happened. And it's not that I don't like the player, but that one just kind of mystified me back then. So,
well, then to make the pick and then not give him a chance, and then trade for Quandre Diggs, and then trade the house for Jamal Adams, just made me think, well, why have you drafted him in round two? I mean, like, have you given up on him? But then they sound they're going to play him at big nickel and they give him the big send up there. But then he gets injured and then Hugo Awadi plays really well at nickel for years. So what happens now? It's like, is Blair just a second round backup now? Or, you know, is Hugo Awadi going to be shoehorned out of the team undeservedly because Blair is back? I mean, just the way that they've used their resources. I mean, that 2019 draft was a huge problem anyway. You know, all the defensive linemen have gone, but we have to take one because we've traded Frank Clark, so we take LJ Collier when we could have taken a whole host of other players.
You could have got Montez Sweat too.
Montez Sweat, you know, AJ Brown, you know, you've got a, oh man, there's a whole host of different positions and players. But if you're going to say, no, we're going to go and we're going to take this kind of, we need a defensive lineman, we're taking one. We need a safety, we're taking one. You get yourself in trouble. And again, you know, the resource going at the safety position, it needs to be reined in. And those picks need to go elsewhere. And I just think, you know, we started off talking about Russell Wilson. And I think a good place to end might be to talk about Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
What do you need to do in the next 12 months to make sure that we do not have a single Colin Cowherd, Mike Silver, Jason Lacanfora, Mike Florio, I mentioned him, anybody, right? Just none of that. What do you need to do to make that happen? And I hope that Pete Carroll looks himself in the mirror and goes, who is the future of this franchise? Is it a 70-year-old head coach or is it a 32-year-old franchise quarterback? And I hope when he comes to that realization that it has to be Wilson, that he just says, look, he's the guy who is going to lead us to potential glory. Without him, it's very unlikely that Carroll is going to win another Super Bowl before he retires. Do what it takes to make Russell Wilson happy. I don't think you can give him enough offensive linemen, receivers, tight ends, running backs this year. And I would do whatever it takes, whatever it takes. If that means moving Adams and Wagner to make Russell Wilson happy for the long term, then I would do it. Because the investment for me has to be around that $35 million quarterback. He has to feel like he's as important as Tom Brady this year. And if the Seahawks do that, and that next year we don't have a single report about Russell Wilson's future, 2021, Corbin, will be a success for me, regardless of how the Seahawks perform.
And this is going to be my closing statement with all this, just because, and I'm not looking to add to any of the drama, because you and I agree on the offensive line and adding weapons. I do think that you've got to do what you can to make your quarterback happy. The big issue with moving a player like Wagner or even Adams, I'm wondering how Russell Wilson responds to that, because you're giving away star talent on defense. But it's one of those things, if you're a GM, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place there because you don't have financial flexibility. And if he wants all those other pieces, something's got to go. And so, again, I do not envy John Schneider at all. This is why he's making big bucks. This is why he just got an extension, so that he can make all of these difficult decisions. But the bottom line is they've got to find a way to shore up the pass protection for him, particularly the center and left guard positions. And I still think getting a left tackle the future this year makes a lot of sense too. But there's only so many draft picks. And so it's just an extremely difficult, challenging offseason that's coming up for the Seahawks. And at the same time, as an observer, I'm very fascinated to see what happens in the next few weeks and what direction that this team chooses to go. It's going to be both challenging and yet exciting, just seeing all the dominoes that are going to be falling in place. Rob, it's been a blast. I've enjoyed having the chance to talk about all the roster construction aspect. And I think we agreed on plenty of things, and there were some stout differences too, but I think that we were able to have a pretty civil agreement when we had those discrepancies.
Yeah, do you know, this is what people used to do before Twitter. You know, they actually spoke to each
civil,
other. And,
civil yeah. disagreements.
They talked, and they didn't just, you know, send 220 character texts to each other and you can't detect tone. It's good to actually have a conversation, and you know what, it was great and thoroughly enjoyable. And I like you, I'm fascinated to see what happens. At the moment, I'm like thinking, how are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? Well, we only have to wait like a month to find out part of the puzzle and a couple of months to find out the rest.
And with everything that's still going on in the world, I know all of us are going to be eager for any off-season football talk, even though the Russell Wilson stuff has already gotten really old. We're going to be eager for actual activity, free agency in the draft, all of that fun stuff, something positive to look forward to. And hopefully the Seahawks will find a way to overhaul this roster so that they have a chance to truly compete for a Super Bowl next season. That would be another way to make Russell Wilson happy. Go deeper in the playoffs. Find a way that you can do that. It's been a pleasure, Rob. Looking forward to doing this in the future.
Anytime, Corbin. It has been a pleasure. Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by checking out our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Thursday episode, I'll be back with my co-host Rob Rang, and we're going to be tackling the franchise and transition tag. Is there a chance that the Seahawks will be using one of those this season amid an offseason unlike any other? We'll also look at some former HBCU standouts that were drafted by the Seahawks as we celebrate Black History Month here in February. Thanks for listening in. Go Hawks!